I'm Joe Healy, and I'm the Microsoft Developer Evangelist for Florida. Today we're going to talk about Silverlake, so all kinds of stuff to show you. When we put the session out, the idea was really to show you the stuff that you can do with Silverlake 3 right now. And accordingly, we're going to build an application, we're going to use some services in it, we're actually going to use some domain services in there, WCFMA services. We're going to show off a bunch of Silverlake 3 features. That's going to go for a couple hours. We're going to end at 5 today. The last hour, we've got a special treat. So the firm Vertigo is the guys who did the Hard Rock site, the Olympic site, the Playboy site, a bunch of the others. Oh, yeah, all right. Bad people there. All right, ladies, stay away from that one. Basically, they're doing some really cutting-edge stuff. And we have one of their employees here with us today, Bill Reese, who's worked on some of those high-profile sites. He's also a Silverlake, in fact, the first Silverlake Microsoft MVP ever. So pretty excited. The last hour, he's going to show us a bunch of stuff with Silverlake 4. So for those of you who missed the PDC, Silverlake 4 is definitely way up there on the game changer thing. Silverlake 3 is damn good right now. Silverlake 4 doesn't have a go-live license on it. That's kind of like why I want y'all to think Silverlake 3, build Silverlake 3, but a lot of Silverlake 4 stuff in the back of your mind for the future. So pretty cool things all around. Hope to have a lot of fun with it, and that's about it. We are doing an interesting experiment today. So you see me like doing a sideshow conversation with the AV guy over there, and then every now and then checking. We are experimenting with live streaming this event. So Redmond's got a big Silverlake application going, actually pulling the feed from this. We're experimenting with the format here that we're going to try using down the road. So some interesting things going on. Every now and then you may hear something weird, or you may see me do something weird with a media encoder, which is running down there on the bottom. That's what that's all about. So just to let you know, there's that little kind of rainbowy Simon game type icon down there, and that's what that is. So just giving you the heads up on that one. All right, so just out of curiosity, does anybody have live Silverlake sites out there in production right now? Two people. All right, so hopefully we can get some motivation around this for down the road. Love to get a bunch more Silverlake stuff going, but so we got a lot of tools, a lot of technologies we're going to be talking about. We do have coffee coming in about 10 minutes now, I think, so I put in an order for some more coffee. So the coffee will come in the back. Susan will let us know when the coffee gets here, and y'all can sprint out and get some coffee before everybody starts going into caffeine withdrawal, but we do have some more coffee coming.
All right.
So we come out, where's my PowerPoint to start? Don't close media encoder. So busy monkeying around with the audio, forget to start up my PowerPoint ahead of time. All right. What kind of, you can see all the bad things I've been doing in my PowerPoints. So today, basically Silverlake 3, my part, Silverlake 3 line of business using WCF and RIA. We're also going to show a bunch of other Silverlake goodies in there. One of the things at the back of the room, if you didn't get it, first off, if you didn't register with Susan, make sure you're registered. We also have Silverlake resource sheets in the back. So it's got a bunch of just different things for learning about Silverlake stuff. There's also a listing of the user groups in the area on the second sheet, which the copy center was supposed to put on the same page, so I killed one less part of a tree, but they didn't manage to pull that off. So basically the Orlando.net groups here, I see Esteban Garcia over there, and then a bunch of other groups are in this area, so a bunch of good .NET groups if you want to play with that. But the resource sheet I have here is not complete. I couldn't fit all my resources on it without putting it in tiny, tiny, tiny print. There's a URL at the bottom, dfwiki.devfish.net, and it's at the bottom of each sheet. Anytime I find what I call can't throw away bookmarks, I tend to put them up in this wiki now. I was keeping them all in a OneNote file, I kept having to email them out to people and stuff like that, but all the resources that are on here, plus a lot more, are up there in that wiki, so you can get up there and get into that. So, whoop, not that one, not that one, not that one, not that one. All right. So one thing about this is if you do start doing interesting things with Silverlake or Azure or Win7 Native, IE8 web slices,
anything like that. Very interested in hearing about it. Send me an email. Love to hear about things like that, and there's potential for some PR around that if you want it. If you're not subscribed to the MSDN Flash, we do have a twice a month Florida-specific .NET newsletter that goes out, and I generally have a little column in there, and you click on a link to follow, and I list all the local events that I'm aware of and put them in there as well. So a good way to stay in touch with what's going on in the community. So Silverlight's gotten a lot of momentum. Just out of curiosity, how many of y'all think you have the Silverlight player installed at this point? Three, four, five, all right. Yeah, so that's kind of what we're seeing is we're somewhere around 50 or 60% on desktop penetration with Silverlight. But we got some neat properties that are going to be using the Silverlight player, one of which is the Silverlight-based Olympics site. So the Olympics are being streamed exclusively in Silverlight this year. Netflix, the Netflix streamer for the PC is Silverlight-driven. Sunday Night Football is being streamed in Silverlight. And there's been some interesting controversy around that because a lot of people are really liking the experience that they're getting off that, and they've said some dirty things about other platforms. I wasn't one of them, but Dolly Parton's even put a Silverlight-based IE8 web slice up onto her site. So that's pretty cool as well. Also, we're seeing a lot of good grassroots momentum here. Really cool site. If you like games, go to silverarcade.com, and there's this wonderful little Silverlight-based gaming platform out there. If you write a game and you want to get it published, you can put it up on Silver Arcade, a nice game aggregation site that folks can go to. And that's actually, Bill was responsible for that site along with some of the other folks in Florida, but just kind of showing some of the local momentum there. UFC's up there, poker's been up there lately in Silverlight. So a lot, we're getting a lot of the online media going in this space, but this is pretty cool. You ever want to burn time, it's Silverlight, HTTP-based. You know, you can sit here, load a game, have a good time, all Silverlight, and you're very, very happy. And I still can't get a high score on Dr. Papa. How old's your daughter?
11.
11. He's got an 11-year-old daughter that can just kick my butt all over Dr. Popper, and it's kind of embarrassing.
She was the playtester.
Oh, she was the playtester for it. Now he tells me. All right. She knows the patterns that work in there. So the session objectives today is basically to learn about features available in Silverlight and basically get you started, get you thinking about what it would take to get started using Silverlight to build something. And then Bill will show you a lot of the features going after that. So we're going to do a Silverlight overview by building an app. Afterwards, we're going to talk about some Silverlight 3 specifics we didn't hit. We'll talk about some mapping, hopefully, using Silverlight and Bing, Deep Zoom, various Silverlight approaches, and then we'll have an afternoon snack in there. And actually, this slide didn't get changed. That's now Bill Reese. So we got to step up there, right? All right. So what's RIA and Silverlight? So RIA is Rich Internet Applications. The idea here is it's vector graphics, animation, the ability to use client-side storage, the ability to have video and audio playback. Under that definition, there's a bunch of things that fit into the real world, right? Obviously, Flash and Air are a player in that real world. HTML5, which is in a plug-in stage right now, just like Silverlight, is in that real world. And then Silverlight, my favorite RIA, another good platform that fits this definition. One of the things that's nice about RIA is you don't worry about browser hassles. You don't worry about whether it's IE6 or IE7 or IE8 or Firefox and its flavors or Opera and its flavors or whatever. You basically say, look, if you're running in one of these supported browsers, then you're going to get the same ubiquitous experience across the board. It makes it a lot easier to develop applications when you don't have to worry about the various browser complexities. So Silverlight is based on WPF. It's a .NET framework subset, so it's essentially core CLR that's there to run inside the browser. So think of that. That's a little managed runtime that sits there inside the browser. It says develop using Visual Studio, but there's actually Eclipse plugins and some other environments as well. You could use Notepad and develop for it if you really wanted to, using the JavaScript model. So a lot of different options you could do with this. Silverlight 1.0 came out very early. Originally it was named WPFE. The product team has to deny this, but I think originally it was called WPF Everywhere, but it was JavaScript driven. So there's no common language runtime in there. Basically, XAML, which is XML-based markup, and JavaScript. Very good media support, very good brush support. Silverlight version 2 was kind of the game changer here, because what happened was we introduced this common language runtime plugin that ran in various browsers. So all of a sudden, you were able to write .NET code that ran on the Mac or across all the browsers inside the browser via the plugin. So IE, Firefox, Safari, Chrome via some hacks, so you can get that notes for that up in the Google Chrome land. Windows, Mac, Linux via Novell. You're able to do VB and C# programming, extensive data support in there. Something called the Dynamic Language Runtime, which is a runtime environment inside of Silverlight. And what the DLR gives us is the ability to run languages like Ruby and Python inside the Silverlight runtime via the DLR. Also something hopefully I'll get a chance to show you, which I think is really cool, deep zoom technology. The ability to take a very, very large image, run a program across it that cuts it up into little bitty squares, and then gives you a very, very fast streaming experience back out via the browser. And networking support in here as well. Silverlight 3 introduced a whole bunch of new stuff that really makes some exciting things. We got the ability to do XYZ coordinate graphic mapping. We have animation easing, so like bounce effects and easing effects. We got the idea of pixel shaders, so we can go in and specifically manipulate things to create fluid dynamics and things like that. We've got the idea of themes in here, so we can use resource dictionary to have themed websites, and when you switch out the resource dictionaries in there, essentially you can switch out your look and feel of your site. Also some text rendering improvements. I like the bitmap APIs, a lot of neat things you can do. You can actually go in to an image on the screen and you can manipulate it pixel by pixel and then redraw it back onto the screen, which you weren't able to do in Silverlight 2. So that's a nice one as well. Important thing in here that really makes this viable is DRM. You know, everyone wants their stuff unencoded and for free on the internet for download, but a lot of the producers don't want to put stuff out there that's not protected from people just spawning it off and ripping it down and things like that. So there's... Ooh, that's neat. Look, I can do that. You hear it?
Yep. Oh, when you touch that.
Yeah, when I touch the... all right. Here. So we got digital rights management in there, so you can protect your content if you choose to, and a whole lot of new controls. Now, I will point out that a lot of the new controls are being introduced out here via the Silverlight Toolkit, which is a free control repository off of CodePlex. It's one of the resources on your sheet you can get to, but if you're looking for controls, always check out the stuff out there on CodePlex. So Silverlight 4 is quite buzzy. Bill's going to go into this, but it was a beta as of the PDC November 2009. There is no go-live license on Silverlight 4 right now, so that's something to pay attention to. Silverlight 4, first half of calendar year 10, it's going to be released somewhere in there. Don't know when, don't even have a month right now, but there's no go-live license on it. So you're kind of hung out on your own, and we actually don't want you to put it in production. But there's some pretty neat stuff in there. So when we talk about the Silverlight plugin, the idea here is something that just snaps into the browser and runs across the PC and Intel-based Macs. And it'll also run on Linux if you use the Moonlight plugin. Support in IE, Firefox, and Safari. It will install into Chrome right now. There's some hacks for doing that. There's also some hacks for getting it to run in Opera, none of which are officially supported at this time. Those are targeted for the Silverlight 4 timeframe, so you can do that. You can check that out. The whole runtime as a browser plugin is under a 5 megabyte download. We're talking a fast install for this thing, so pretty compelling there. When we're working with this stuff, core common language runtime and base class runtimes, this is essentially a subset of the .NET framework. So if any of y'all ever did any programming for mobile devices using Compact Framework, this is analogous to that. But what this means is the other day some guy was trying to use systems.collection.ArrayList. He was getting very frustrated because he couldn't find it. and the Silverlight stuff. And I said, no, no, it's not there. You have to use a systems.generics. Whatever the equivalent was. And, you know, he got mad because it wasn't there. But that's the idea, is they strip some functionality out of this runtime. You may occasionally run into areas that just aren't there for the runtime that you may be used to using, because he had a pattern of using that one particular class. So it is a cored down, basically, runtime. It's got stuff in there for media, XAML, rendering and reading XAML. Digital rights management has been added on top of that. But underneath, it's just the core language runtime stuff. XAML is basically a declarative language, very similar to HTML in that it's these tags. You know, you have an open tag, you have a closed tag, you do some stuff in the middle, and you set properties and values and attributes and those kind of things. It doesn't matter what language you're using to write your code, XAML is XAML. Very strong support for data binding, very designer tool friendly. We have a series of designer tools I'll show you a little bit today called Expression and designer tools like that. But that's generally where you can do a lot of your markups and things along those lines. So this XAML right here, we have a canvas, we have an ellipse, we have another ellipse inside of there, and another ellipse inside of there, and then we have a path. Draws a smiley face for us. Cool? No, it's a smiley face. All right. So let's take a look at what we're actually going to build today. And my environment's pretty straight up. So I got Visual Studio 2008, Silverlight SDK, I got Expression Blend, and I got SQL Express on here. Along with a million other things, which we won't mention, but that's the core stuff. Open up. Warming up the gerbils here. Give me my cursor back. Set my cursor free. All right. Good cursor. There we go. All right. So I got a database here. I just want to hit it real quick to make sure that we don't get a cute little pipes there, which I'm not trapping for at this point. What OS am I running? You really asked me that? You, back of the room. Go in the corner, put on the hat.
What's Vista?
All right, for those of you who are asking, I'm running Win 7. You can tell by the weirdo thing on the background. That's one of the Win 7 character themes on there. But yes, I am running Win 7. What's Vista? Never happened. I deny it ever happened. It's kind of like that time I danced with the lampshade on my head in college. All right. So let's run this. Now, I will go ahead and give you some pre-runners on this. We're building a Twitter application. It's kind of a rich client app that reads Twitter feeds and stuff like that. Accordingly, we are calling the Twitter API. Now, that being said, sometimes Twitter can have some interesting issues with things like actually being able to run and the API is being serviceable. So we come over here, we pick up a Twitter user, and we can see we picked up all the tweets from this thing. We can see all the friends of this, and then on this particular one, we can see the friends that have the most followers there. I can switch off users. I can come in, and you'll see it'll switch out, and this is the Star Trek guy, so this guy's a big fan of the Star Trek people. We're also going to do some drag and droppedness on this, so we'll come over here, and we can drag and drop in Silverlight now. We can come over here, and we can search. So we can see who's saying bad things about poor old Devfish today, which is my Twitter handle. Hey, Esteban. Where's Esteban? Raise your hand, Esteban. Esteban actually runs the Orlando.net group. So that any of y'all that are interested in some of the cool things happening with them, definitely want to talk in with that. Whoa, look at all this. Bill, you're pumping some traffic on it. There we go. Bite Master never made it, so he must have hit the fog.
I'll get Rev Twitter.
All right. And there's me griping because the hotel rate was good, but the parking was $20 and the internet $16, so that kind of makes up for the good hotel rate. So there we go. A couple other things we're going to do in here. Well, I'm not going to show you that because you're going to get to see it anyway. You can all start screwing around. But data form editing, so we can come in here and edit data and get out there. And then we're also doing some stuff with just very simple domain service calls and things like that. That's what we're going to build in this application. So we got a nice long run. This looks like something you might start thinking about for building line of business enterprise applications. So, nice feature there. We'll also talk about running this out of browser. I'll show you how to make this run out of browser off your desktop. I'll show you how to detect your mode when you're running. We'll talk about how to check for updates and things like that. Then we're going to go on to more Silverlight stuff. So we got a ton of things we want to cover here. And this is just Silverlight 3. So Silverlight 4 adds even more. That's one of the reasons I do this resource sheet. If you go up there to the wiki that's listed and you click on technology, it'll come up with a list of categories for it. I got one category up there called free training, and I've listed all the sites and various technologies I found free training for. So there's about 17 areas of free training. So there's free training up there for Expression, there's free training up there for Silverlight, there's free training up there for basic programming. So you can really get going with a lot of the resources that I put onto that site for y'all. Okay, let's come out here, and what we're going to do is let me make sure I still don't have my Twitter. I want to do something real quick, this one goes away. All right. So I'm going to come out here, and I'm going to do a file, new, project. And I'm sitting here under VB, and I've got my Silverlight area here. So when I install the Silverlight tools for Visual Studio, it gives me these new Silverlight project templates. Inside of here, what I have is Silverlight application, Silverlight class library, Silverlight navigation application, which is a specific navigation framework that Silverlight has built in now that we're going to talk about. And then I've also installed the WCF RIA toolkit. So it's a set of WCF domain service providers in there that are super easy to consume via Silverlight, specifically kind of geared in Silverlight, but they are consumable by other places as well. So it gives us a business application template. So we're going to call this our Twitter application. Okay, and so now what we're going to do with this is we have a very basic, happy little shell here, and I'll show you what it looks like. Basically, we got an outer navigation shell that's our main page, and then we've got some inner frame windows that enable us to navigate from page to page. You see it also wires in with backward forward support, and we also have deep linking available, so it knows that you're able to have a specific page name that you can bookmark and get back into. So let's take a look at some of the mechanisms that are in there supporting this, and then we're going to do some modifications and start building it up. So first thing we got to do is we're going to get in here and we're going to introduce some elements in here. One thing you need to understand, because it looked like a lot of people hadn't worked with Silverlight, is the naming syntax. So this is a XAML rectangle. We'll draw a rectangle on the screen with all these attributes. If I want to reference it via code, I have to give it the X name syntax in there. So X colon name equals yellow rectangle. From code, I'll be able to now hit yellow rectangle and do programmatic things about it. So that just makes it available via code. Silverlight navigation. So there's a base Silverlight navigation template. Gives us pages and frames. And we'll talk about some of these others in a little more detail. But it also gives us a URI mapper and deep linking. So the key thing with the Silverlight navigation template is that there's a frame tag in main page XAML. So we'll see this navigation frame. And it knows how to deal with all this forward and backward navigation stuff. It knows how to trap out any movement in there, put it into the browser history, etc. And the app.xaml file actually defines out the styles that are used in this application. So we can go into app.xaml, if we want to introduce new styles or switch out styles that are used in our application, we can go set those in app.xaml as a global style switch. So we see here we've got this navigation frame, it's named content frame. It's picking up a style from app.xaml, and that style is named content frame style. It's also got an event handler in here for when it's navigated. It goes to content frame underbar navigated, and then if navigation fails, there's another one for a failure. Now, deep linking is also built into this business application template. And this is the idea that you can embed stuff into the URL that tells search engines what your page is about. So if you're on Joe's phishing site and it's licenseinfo.html as your URL, a search engine knows that those are kind of keywords that it can put through. So what this does is first the deep linking gives us something that's a little more SEO friendly, and it also gives us a page specific URL that we can bookmark. And this is enabled via URI mapper classes. So you come in here and we look at this URI mapper. What it does is we say if the URI is blank, it maps over to views home XAML. If the URI is equal to some page name, and that says that's variable content right there, then it maps over to views page name.xaml. So that just substitutes in. Now we see under here we got these views pages, so we're going to introduce settings page in there and we'll build that up in a second. We've also got built-in data integration with ASP.NET in here. So we've got WCF RIA services, which if you're building a Silverlight tier right now, it's got a go live license, so I really think you should take a look at this. We can also support ADO.NET data services, which is, might be one of the things you're currently using for your applications. Problem with this is if you try and take your app out of browser using the current implementation of ADO.NET data services, it will go on you. There's a 1.5 CTP out there of ADO.NET data services you can get, but you're kind of in a mainline framework upgrade cycle kind of piece with that. We also have WCF SOAP services or ASMX services also you can use for data provider. Essentially, you can get to about anything you want. You can also use raw HTML scraping, which is one technique we're going to use in here as well. So a couple different routes for hitting data. So, with Silverlight 3, you could use raw sockets if you want. You can parse JSON and XML, all kinds of neat things we got for pulling info. Silverlight can do the idea of cross-domain requests. So cross-domain requests, remember with Silverlight, I'm going after this app. I'm pulling it down, and now it's running inside my browser via a plugin. So I pull down from site A, and all of a sudden I want to go off to Blue Rose Games and get some data. If Blue Rose Games doesn't allow apps that come down to, from one site to come into it specifically via cross-domain XML policy, then that's not going to work. It's the same deal with client-side browser JavaScript-driven applications that want to go off and make a web request against a browser that they didn't come from. They run into cross-domain issues. So the Twitter site actually does not allow for cross-domain browser requests. So we're going to have to do a little munged data scenario here where we pull our app down. To get our Twitter data, we go back to our main server and we make a call from our server over to Twitter, which is legal without the cross-domain XML. But Silverlight does work with cross-domain requests. It just we can't use it in this particular scenario because the Twitter guys haven't put it up there. This is the data tier that we're going to use, WCF Data Services. RIA Services, thank you. Very easy to use, a data platform. The tough thing, if you're coming from a rich client development, it does use an asynchronous coding model that is a little interesting. So it's a pattern where you basically invoke an asynchronous operation and then say, when you're done, call back over here. And then I'm going to go into the result of that callback and parse out my information. So it gets a little more complicated when you're using that asynchronous invocation pattern. But we'll take a look at that, and it does turn into a pattern. About the fifth time you watch me do it, you're going to be like, I've seen that enough, quit typing it in. So I'll get you sick of it. First point you'll be horrified, then you'll be fascinated, then you'll be tired of it. So we'll get there. So let's build some stuff. Any questions so far, by the way? Eerily silent group, even with JT in the audience. Sir? We'll actually hold that one. Hold that one. Sir?
Where do we get a copy of the slide
deck? How about this? I will post it up tomorrow morning, or if you email me directly, I will send you the uncleaned up version along with my uncleaned up notes. As I've been doing this roadshow, I'm doing little notes, but this is how you build everything we're working on today. My own custom stuff, not available anywhere else. But I'll be posting these up on the download as soon as I get them cleaned up. If you want the raw stuff, send me a note, and I'll get you a link to the raw stuff right away. jhealy@microsoft.com. In fact, it's at the bottom of the resource sheet.
I'll make my stuff available too.
So Bill's going to make his stuff available too. All right. Just strip out the big stuff, because I'm going to put it up on a SkyDrive and don't like over 45 meg. Everything I've shown here is SQL Server focused. You got anything maybe for Oracle scenario? You know, you've been doing anything with Oracle maybe?
Yeah, so I'm working with a customer that's actually doing Oracle on the server, and we're using Entity Framework to talk to Oracle. And then we're using WCF, not WCF RIA, we're just using the WCF SOAP services to communicate down to the client in SilverLake.
And how are you getting Oracle? What provider?
It's the DevArc provider.
So,
what's that?
DevArc.
ODP.net
on the back end?
I think so.
He thinks so, but he doesn't dabble with the unclean database, so just playing that. For those of you who don't know, our friend JT up here is the runner of the Oracle user group here in Orlando. So that's where the Oracle question comes from, so pretty cool stuff. But Bill's actually working on a project that is using SilverLight with an Oracle backend, and they're using DevArt as their intermediate provider in there. So DevArt. Actually, if you send me a link to that, I'll put it in my resource slide. Or if I can ever find a pen, I'll write it down. All right. So many pens are given away up front, and so what?
Some of them actually work.
Yeah, if you get one that works, they work pretty good. If you get one that stinks, go get another one. All right, so what are we doing? All right, so we got this basic SilverLight application here, and if I come in, let's look at how this is structured. So first we have a web application here, and what happens with this web application is it compiles the SilverLight project. This is our SilverLight project here, and it builds a ZAP out of it, an XAP. And then it gives us a couple test pages to start up our SilverLight application. One's an HTML, one's an ASPX. They look pretty much the same. So we come down here, and basically we got this object data application, xSilverLight 2, so it starts up an instance of SilverLight, and then it's pointing over at the Twitter application.zap as its startup, and boom, off we go. Then we got some failover stuff for if it's not actually instantiated, it'll pop up what's in here, and then you can tell them to go install SilverLight. Down in here in our actual SilverLight stuff, it gets a little more interesting. We've got this main page XAML, and inside of main page XAML, not there yet. This felt tablecloth. I'm like, oh, that ain't good. Maybe get a little prop for it. We come in here. Remember I talked about the X-frame. So here is the frame. All right, you lose. Go away. Here's the frame that essentially goes out and wires in. We've got our styles in there. We've got a navigated handler. We've got its home page specified. Then inside of there, we've got the URI mapper I talked about. So you can see the URI mapper in play. Then we've actually got these stack panels and stuff that give us a layout on the page. Here's the hyperlink area for menu items as well. Now what I'm going to do is I'm going to come over here just to show you all how this kind of works. We're going to open up Home XAML, and that's it basically in the layout. There's nothing in it right now. It's just a bunch of text blocks. So I'm going to come over to Home XAML. I'm going to right mouse on this, and I'm going to open it in Expression Blend. In Visual Studio 2008, yes. In 2010, no. You can also do this F5 key to visualize it. Get it? Run it? Yeah. So 2010's actually got a pretty nice visualizer. 2008, you better have a copy of Blend around if you want to get any visualization on it. All right, now what's neat here is we see the same project layout we had. So you see same kind of layout. We can now go open up Home XAML. If you come over here, you can see the XAML behind it, and there's a visual rendering of it. Over here, we have the object and timeline tree in here, so I can drill in and see various things in here. And we're just going to take out our page scroll viewer. Get rid of that. And then I'm going to come over to my object area. Open that up. I'm going to come down to controls. I'm going to get an ellipse. We'll drag an ellipse in. I'll maybe do an opacity type thing, or gradient rather. And we're going to grab red as my starting color, and I got a beautiful red and white gradient. We come in here, and this is why you want to use Blend sometimes, because trying to remember, you know, just doing a simple gradient filled ellipse can get a bit hairy in there. So, you know, definitely you wind up working back and forth between the two tools. I want to show you this. If I just hit F5 at this point and run, you can run right inside of Blend as well. Builds it, kicks off the dev server. And I have a wonderful looking circle. So that's the end of the business application development. All right. So if we close Blend, what's happened is I had this file up in Visual Studio. I modified it in Blend. And when I go back to Visual Studio, it says the file's been modified outside the source editor. Do I want to reload it? And I say yes. And now I've got the full layout of everything that was there. Cool? So the two things play pretty nicely together. In 2010, they play even nicer together. So, you know, the picture's just going to get better and better. Did that. Talk about what? Sure. So if I want to deploy this, essentially I need to deploy Twitter Application Web. It has the ZAP contained in it. Off you go. Put that on the server. Unless you're using specific IIS features like smooth streaming, which is nice, live streaming, anything like that for media, you can basically deploy to any server you want. So you can put it up on a Linux Apache box. You can put it up on just a basic HTML server. And obviously, I prefer IIS, but no, and the web app around it. And then if you add more resources, resource dictionaries, or more resources around the file, more ZAP files, stuff like that, you'd include those. But remember, what's happening here is this app test page is going and loading a ZAP. If you have images and stuff that you were using with this, they'd be there in your client bin as well. And it would carry those along.
Those pages there and then the right
Yeah, so you could add a ZAP file to your own other project as well, or you could add it into a solution where you can easily tell it that Silverlight application is associated with this ASP.NET project, and then during the build process, it's going to put the ZAP files in the right place for you. The ZAP file itself is just a zip file, basically, that contains a manifest, all the DLLs, and everything else that you need for your Silverlight app. So it's it's the equivalent, there's in Flash, there's the equivalent SWIFT file or whatever, it's similar to that. And you can actually change the name to zip and load it and uncompress it and see what's in there.
We got a second mic just in case, so I don't...
No second mic. I'll keep having to do the lean over when we got a good...
We'll get to know each other. Well.
I don't want to know you that well. Nothing personal.
If you put that in another tip, then you don't have to lean as far.
How about right there?
Like, there you go.
Good. You get an extra little thing in the box for a t-shirt.
Oh, handheld mic?
Okay, so where are we at with this? Oh, yeah, so what we're going
to... Do we have to stop people from that then a few times? The one or the other?
Oh. We'll just hand it back and forth.
Yeah.
Okay, what am I doing with this? Oh, all right, so what I'm going to do is I'm going to introduce a new page into this scenario, and I want to do this to show you the URI mapper and things like that, how it's acting. So I'm going to come in, I'm going to add in a new view. And it's going to be the Silverlight page, and we're going to be settings... .xaml. And let's see, I'm just going to put a text box in here real quick. So I'll come in and I'll go text block font size equal 30, text equal IAM settings. All right, so when that comes up, we should see very simply just IAM settings. Now, when I run it, it's not going to be in the menu. Chugga chugga, come on. All right, so you see it's not in the menu, but if I come up here and I put in settings, it knows to go get that, but if we go in here and we put in settings from the great Reese, it doesn't know about that page, right? So it's actually mapping what we put in after that to that particular XAML page and pulling it in. So you see kind of how that URI mapper is working there, right?
Well, there was that cool little child window we got there too.
Huh? Yeah. I'll show you how to build one of these. Towards the end, but the point was made, look at this child window that pops up. This is something new that's in Silverlight 3 that was a big request. This is a pop-up modal window in Silverlight that's not a browser alert window, which I hate. Okay? So basically we got this window, you can drag it around. I can't do anything on the backside, so it's blocked me from doing anything but fully pop-up modal window. So what that is that's a new child window template that's there in Silverlight. So if you were to come in and do an add new item, you would see Silverlight child window, and that's a pop-up modal window that's now available as a template in Silverlight. Okay. All right, so now what we're going to do is we're going to take this page and... Yes? No. I hit the page twice, I think. It didn't do it the first time, but I noticed that too. I was trying to skim right by it.
Yeah, too observant in the crowd.
Yeah, so we come up. He saw it. Home, test. Yeah, it's popping up twice. I don't know why it's doing that. I have to figure that one out.
Yeah.
It was double effect. There was no smoke and mirrors. It was double bang for the buck. So, yeah. I don't do smoke and mirrors, which cost me a week of my life rewriting this stuff from what it was. All right. So now what we're going to do is I want to come in here and I actually want to wire it into the main page. So we're going to come down here to this section where I had those little menus. And there's a rectangle that's using a divider style to kind of separate them on a vertical basis. And then there's a link for the about box. So I'm going to put settings in there now. So we're going to come in rectangle style, name equals settings link. Style equals static resource, link style, that's good. We got to set our content to settings. And we got to go here and give it a name that is actually settings. Now when I run this, what we'll see there we are, settings. So now when I click on settings, I got settings. So I added in the menu option that way. So now what we're going to do is I want to set up a page. We're going to use this page to modify the user IDs and logins for our Twitter application. So we'll come over here to the Twitter application web. I'm going to do a show all files. Whoop, wrong one. Show all files. And we're going to add in some app data. So I'm going to do an add existing item. I got a nice little library shortcut set up to my Tiki files over here, so I'm going to go grab database 1 MDF. Window, close all documents. We're going to come over here. We got our Server Explorer, and I'm going to refresh, make that so we can see it. Expand it. We got some tables in here. Great, there's a user table. All right. Now what I want to do with this is I want to come in and I want to create a ADO.NET entity data model so I can expose that out. Basically, it'll create a data tier for me against this database. So I'm going to come in here. I'm going to do an ADO.NET entity data model. I'm going to name this my Twitter users application EDM. I'll add that in. I'm going to generate it from the database. I'm going to name this my Twitter user entities. Now it'll say which database objects do I want to work this against. And we're going to get the Twitter users data model. Whoop, not good. We'll do a finish. And what we'll do is we'll bring up a design surface where I can override the default entity names and things like that. Timing's everything. There we go. All right, now, here's one tip. If you have a table with the name user as the table name and also as potentially the collection name, there's a good potential it's going to be a reserved word somewhere in your system. So, especially with domain services. So it doesn't like that, and it's also just not that clear to me. Because if I come over here, we can see the collection of all the users is named user, and the name of the entities in there is user. So this is an ADO.NET EF thing. I'm going to call my collection Twitter users, and I'm going to call my name here Twitter user. So Twitter users is a containment for a bunch of Twitter user. I could call it Twits, yes. Trust me, on Twitter I've called them a lot worse things. I like it when I'm sitting at home watching TV. I can't keep it up during the day because then I would get less than the less done I already get done. That's a Peter Piper. So now I've got a ADO.NET data model in there. I want to create a domain service about it. So when the easiest way to think of a domain service is something, a service class that inherits from this domain service base, and it gives you automatic wire-ups to be called asynchronously from web applications. It also, in the Silverlight context, will automatically generate client type proxies to call for us. So this is a pretty nice wire-up scenario. So what I'm going to do, I'm going to come in here, add a new item, and it's going to be a domain service class, and we're going to call this our Twitter users service. And we got a Twitter user service. I want to enable client access. I'm going to pick up the Twitter user entity. So it inspected and said, hey, you got this Twitter user entity collection running around in your project. Let's use that. It would list anything I had, really. And you can pick which ones. And it generates me this Twitter user service in here. So it has some functions. So it inherits link to entities, domain service of Twitter user entities. It comes in here and we got a function that's get Twitter users. We got insert Twitter user, update, delete. So that hit pretty much hits our CRUD definitions. Anyone not know what CRUD is? Raise your hand. All right, JT, I saw you raise your hand. Create, read, update, and delete. Actually, I saw Andy Warren raise a hand on that one, so he's hiding in the back from you. All right. So those of you wondering who Andy is, Andy runs the Orlando SQL Server Group. So he's in the very back of the room hiding. Wave, Andy. So he's also the guy who puts on all the SQL Saturdays and stuff like that. But him and the Oracle guy can't actually sit close to each other without a matter-antimatter collision happening. So we always put them on opposite corners of the room so the universe remains intact. Pretty good. All right. Anyway. It was good for me. Hey, you know. We got that domain service in there. One thing I'm going to do in here, I always like to do when I'm doing these kind of applications, is I want to spike the port that Cassini's running on. I don't want it varying all over the place. It tends to muck up the proxy sometimes. So what I'm going to do is I go into the properties on my web app, and virtual path, I'm going to spike it to a specific port here. And I'm going to use 52626. And we could actually extend it, use its own virtual path. You can get in there and customize how the little local web server is going to start up. All right, so now what we need to do is we're going to go in and we're going to whack up that settings page and make it so it can display some data. So we got this text block. It's now ready to get out of our way. And that encoder slowed it down. We come in here, and what I'm going to do is I'm going to start a list box, and X name, and it's going to be our user list box. And the item source here, item source, if I would use the IntelliSense, it would work out a lot better, is binding. So when you have controls and you have forms inside of Silverlight or WPF, they have a data context. And you can bind to their inherent data context. And what this says is, whatever's in my data context, I want you to bind to. So we got a very simple user list box that we're going to bind to. So now what we need to do is work in some code. So we'll do some view code. And the first thing I want to do to just make my life easier, I come in here and I go imports twitterapplication.web. So that enables me to shortcut my namespace resolution when I'm coding into things. And what I need to do now is I need to set up a context to actually go out and talk to my domain service. Now, realize, think about this. This is Silverlight running in the client's browser, and I want to go back to my server and talk to this domain service that's running up there. Okay? So I'm going to do a dim m under bar cx as new Twitter users. Let me try this magic real quick. Build. Alright, let's try that again. You're built. Private m under bar cx as new. Ah, there we go. This is one thing you'll notice. When we start changing things, and the server. Sometimes it doesn't pull in on the client. Sometimes if you change the XAML, it'll break the IntelliSense that's there in the code behind. The reason, if you drill all the way in, you'll see this .g.vb file that's being generated for each class. That's where the IntelliSense is actually pulled from. So sometimes the IntelliSense will get freaky. If you do a rebuild all, it'll update it for you. But what we want to do is we want to create an instance of this Twitter user's context. This knows how to go off and talk to our domain service. This knows about all the entities and stuff that live in it. Now, once we've got that in there, what I want to do is I want to go me.dataContext equals m underbar cx dot Twitter users. And then what I want to do take that context and tell it to load. So remember, we're kind of in an asynchronous mode here, so it's a little different. Get Twitter users query. So the data context is going to be whatever's in the Twitter users in this particular Twitter users context. And then we tell the context to go off and load up this Twitter users query inside of itself. Okay, so then all we got to do is we run. Chugga chugga. Settings. Twitter user 1, Twitter user 2. Well, that's pretty darn ugly, but basically it's pulled two rows out of there, and this is what it's showing. Because all it's doing right now is a default 2 string against the data context. So what we want to do is we want to go in and we want to pretty this up a little. So I'm going to come in here. We've got our list box item. It's pulling stuff back in, and what we want to do is we want to tell it to format it in a particular way. Data template. Oops, stop. Happy fingers. All right, we're going to come in here and we're going to do text equals. I do, actually. Bill caught me on a boo-boo. No, I don't. Snippets, not on this one. I haven't built one for this. You'll get plenty of snippets in a little while, so enjoy it while you can watch me thrash here. I will be doing lots of cutting and pasting very shortly. All right, we got a data template in here. We're going to come in with the data template, and text is going to be binding. And in this case, instead of doing a general binding, we tell it to bind on a particular field. So it's going to bind on the username. So list box item template with a data template, and it's going to bind on the username. So now when I run it, I ought to see the usernames that are in there. Come over to settings. And now we can actually see the specific usernames coming in. Cool? All right, so now we want to be able to edit it. So, let's see what we're going to do here. So we're going to have a master detail form. On the left side is going to be the users. On the right side is going to be the detail. So I got to come into my grid, and I have to actually come in, and I got to set up some column definitions. And we need to quit doing that. All right. And then we can come in here, and I can go column definition. And the first column is going to have a width of 200. And then I'll do a column definition, and the width of the second one is going to take up the whole screen. Now what I want to do is I want to use a data form toolkit down here below the list box. By default, this guy is going to happily hop into column 0, and we're going to have our data form hop into column 1. So I come over here, and this is actually part of the Silverlight control toolkit. When you install it, it drops everything over here, and we now have a data form. One thing I want to show you with this before I do it, watch my namespaces up top, which is going to be hard, but you see the like the first one's presentation. When I come over here and I drag in my data form below list box, and then we go up and we take a look, you see it now added this new XML namespace in for me. So it automatically adds the namespaces when you drag stuff into the design surface. So now I got the data form toolkit in there, and I'm going to go grid.column equals 1. And what I'm going to do next is I'll give it a name, xname equals detail form. And then I want some command buttons to be visible, so I'm going to make the commit button be visible. Then what I need to do is when the list box selection changes, I want to rebind what's in the data form. So we're going to come here, selection changed equals, and I'm going to do a new event handler, so it created an event handler for me. Then I can right mouse, navigate to the event handler, and it drops me right into that event handler. Now we're going to have to use a pattern to basically wire in our data here. So we're going to come in, and all we're going to do is go into the list box, which is really bound not to the name, but to a specific Twitter user, and we're going to bind it in. So I'll go detail form dot current item equals e dot added items 0. So whatever changed in that list box. Current item, thanks, yeah. What? No, this is all executing on the client. Yeah, well, cool or not cool, right? Depends on how big your data sets are. And this is where just doing it versus the architecture happens. But what's happening is we passed across a whole data source down into the client. Now the client's working on that data source without round-tripping back to the server each time. The most expensive runs you'll see in applications are actually when you're pounding on the server. So this cuts some of that back and forth. Now at the same time, if you do a select star against a 10 million row table, you know, you've got an issue there. So you've got to watch that kind of thing. But this is actually a better model on the network in that you can sit there and work with stuff locally without round tripping the server each time you're working on some data. Right, yeah, so his comment was you can code on the client side in this language.
We also don't have megabytes of HTML going back and forth.
Yeah, so you think about every time you do a web application, you're streaming all these table tags and TR tags and those kind of things. Bill's comment was you're not doing that with this. Once the app is down, you're just passing data streams back and forth. So this is actually advantageous in low bandwidth scenarios. So what is this thing? All right, slow down. There we go. And I think we're ready to run. Oh, wait. Got to do one more thing to it, but it'll be good enough for now. So we come in. We run over to settings. We've got user 1, user 2. We come over here, say OK, move back and forth, get rid of the 1, 2, 3, say OK, and looks like it's good until we refresh and we realize we were just changing the client data and we never committed it when we saved it, right? So what we need to do to save our changes back out of the out of our client-side application. So the Silverlight, you're thinking that, you know, that's really a client application, is we need to set up a handler for when it ends and submit it back. So we're going to set up a edit ended, and then we'll just set up, again, a new event handler, and right mouse, navigate to the event handler, and then all we're going to do is m underbar cx dot submit changes and let it figure it out for us. So now when I come up there and I run this, and we come over to the setting, and I grab one, and I knock 1, 2, 3 off the end. and I actually come down here and save it, and then I refresh the page, it's now saved back to the database. Cool? All right. Any questions? Right? Right, which compiles into this thing called the ZAP.
Right.
Yes, it can, but it has to be installed out of browser. And we'll talk about that later. You still got to get there.
You got some XML or some HTML on a web app that's surrounding your...
Right here. Yep, so basically... it has a object tag in here that goes out and creates an instance of the Silverlight plugin and then loads it up with Twitter application.zap. One of the apps I'll show you at the end will actually have multiple Silverlight projects on it on the same page, and they'll be cross-communicating with each other. Sir?
How do you go about adding additional data? Do you have to
To add additional tables in here, you could do a domain service. You could reopen the domain service and the entity data context. You'd add the tables into the ADO entity framework, and then I'd drop out my current domain service and regenerate a new domain service. You can also, which is interesting, add in a new domain service for each table, pull it over to the client separately, and use link to do essentially heterogeneous joins against just data sources that are living there. But I think you're really after the first one, which is, we got this users table, and now maybe events came in. I want both those inside the same domain service. How do I do that? Delete your domain service, go back, update your entity framework model, create a new domain service on it, and the field naming and all that should remain the same. Any comments on that?
That sounds right. And then it'll automatically regenerate the client.
Yeah, and then it'll automatically regenerate the client side. Cool. All right, so we were just sitting here working against a domain. What? Oh, sorry, another question? If Windows Silverlight, basically it's detecting whether Silverlight's installed or not.
And it's optional. The object tag by itself, you want me to?
Yeah. Give me a chance.
So the object tag by itself is enough to load the Silverlight application. You would use Silverlight.js to do things like determine if Silverlight's installed and be able to automatically refresh the page once Silverlight is installed and do things like that. So you can automatically, without them shutting down the browser, coming back in, it can give you an in-place install type of environment, and that's what it takes care of.
Generally, we're recommending folks start using the object tag with the failover, like it's set up in the default Silverlight 3 stuff now, to hey, if it's installed, cool. If it's not, give them a little thing that says install Silverlight. Okay, so what I'm going to do here is I want to show y'all how to explore into a non-domain service. And the idea behind this is interesting, right? If I can have, or a non-data service, if I can have a non-data service, one that's not really bound to any database, I can pretty much do anything I want. It's custom code just returning something that I tell it using the domain service model. So what we're going to do is we're going to come over here and we're going to set up the simplest of all services, the Echo service. So we're going to add in a new item. And it's going to be a new domain service class, and we're going to call it our Echo service. And you see it automatically tries to associate me in with entities. I'm saying, no, I don't want any entities. And we say it's just going to be Echo service. And what I need to do with this is basically we've got our Echo service base class, it's been a trib, enable client access. I got a function I want to put in here, public function echo ss string as string, return echo ampersand s ampersand just put a space and now dot to string. All right. Now, to make this callable, I need to come in and I need to specify it as a service operation. For those of you who don't speak VB, make all these pluses and put a semicolon at the end. Don't worry, I do that to the C sharp when I'm doing C sharp. I explain to the VB guys the same way. So, what? You're a polyglockney? I don't even want to know what you're doing with that. Anything you're doing that's poly, I don't want to hear about it. All right. Basically, we have a service now that can be called via the client stuff. So we're going to set up a little about box over here that calls into our service once it decides to get done building. We'll come over here, and I'm actually going to cheat a little. I promised you I'd quit typing so much. We're going to go open file, tiki files, demo files. Somewhere in here is my echo markup XAML. .xml. Just going to grab this out real quick, control C, and I'll go over here into this and control V, and I have an echo button, I have a send me text box, and I have a results text box. So I'm going to come over here, and that doesn't actually exist yet, so what we do is click equals new event handler. I got my echo button click, and now I'm in the code behind for that. So with this, what we have to do is I'm going to make an asynchronous call out to the server with a parameter, and I'm going to get back the result. So the first thing imports I need is my Twitter application.web, and then I need my system.windows.ria.data, which is where service operation lives. So that's the kind of attribute stuff I'm going to be using. Now we come down here, the same kind of pattern we did before. Dim m underbar context as a new Twitter application users context. I don't see my echo context because it probably starts with echo. now one thing, when I created my domain service, this is something I want to point out in here. As we move along and we look at this echo service, you see I'm importing, or I'm setting my context against echo context. I've never defined anything here called echo context. I never defined my Twitter user context. It creates those contexts for me automatically off of echo service. So it looks at the name, whacks out the service, and creates a context. Something kind of interesting if you're going, where the heck did that come from? That is kind of magic behind the scenes on this. So it creates the echo context. Now what I'm going to do with this is we're going to come in here and I'm going to get the text out that I want to send from the... this is one of those little IntelliSense foobars again I was talking about. So, yeah, it's all solved in 2010, along with Silverlight 4. It waxes your car, it chops down trees, it's really, really good. So I go in, what happened with Send Me Text Box wasn't showing up in the IntelliSense. Because I pasted some XAML in, the background IntelliSense file hadn't been regenerated, so rebuilding that form basically pulled the IntelliSense in. So now we got text to string. So we go off and we get what's in send me underbar text box. Now it gets a little tricky, and this is the first time you've seen this. I'm going to dim out my invoke operation as an invoke operation of string, because that's a parameter name I'm sending across. And then what I'm going to do is I'm going to go invoke op equals m underbar cx dot echo with underbar text. So when it's invoked, it's going to call echo with that text parameter. Now, what I need to do is I need this thing to be able to call back after it's done to a particular place. So this would be my private sub echo operation completed, with the parameter order being sender as object and E as event args. And that's the signature of a callback. So what I want to do with this is I want to do add handler for invoke op.completed, and I want it to be address of me.echo operation completed. Yeah, that's the asynchronous call. So it's queuing it up. You think about it. We create, when we do that, we essentially create all the plumbing. It's say, hey, invoke operation, get ready. I want you to get ready to do an asynchronous call for me. Then I want your asynchronous call to be this echo thing with this text parameter. When you're done, by the way, come back and hook in to this particular function. So now the awkward part here is we got to... That's a plus equals in C-sharp. Yeah. I know it's confusing to you C-sharp guys, but...
Plus equals tab, yeah.
Yeah. Wimps. Bunch of wimps, I tell you.
The V stands for verbose, right?
No, which is more verbose? String S equal new string, left paren, right paren, or dim S is new string?
Var X
equals... Oh, all right. One or zero based arrays? Geek debates. All right. Dim op as invoke operation. Again, same kind of pattern of string. Equals direct cast sender invoke operation of string. So basically that goes off and goes into the sender and cast it out to an invoke operation. Then what we're going to do is we come over here and we go results under text block dot text equals underbar op dot value. All right, so that's our hard little code wire up. Let's see if it works, which is always exciting when I'm doing this on the fly. Yes, that's magic. Yeah. You mean something like a super secret function to echo the date and time from the server? Yeah, you can wrap whatever you want. Think about it. I wrote a custom domain service that has nothing to do with data. It just gives me the wire up to call from a Silverlight client that's deployed into a browser back onto the surface. And that's why I show that one thing, is a lot of people with Rhea get real buried into the idea that it's only for data services. And you can use it for any kind of service. So we come in here, echo me, goes off. This data has come back from the server. If I had it wide enough, it would be showing it. But it would show the date and time. There's a date and time coming from the server. Now think about this. What this program is doing, rich client application, sitting there running in a browser, sends off a very teeny little tiny post out to the server, gets the data back, and drops it back. If this were HTML, you'd be sending the whole page back and forth. Yep. Okay, let me see. What time are we at? 2:27. Did the cookie show up yet? Anyone see? There are cookies. Let's take a 10-minute break. And I will get going right at the 10-minute mark, and then we'll keep going. I'm going to sprint out there for a cup of coffee to keep my voice going, and we'll keep having some fun. I wonder what they're going to do with the encoding during the break, because there's going to be this 10-minute thing of the screen just sitting there. I know what we could do, Bill. Silver Arcade or Blue Rose Games?
Silver Arcade. We could put up a resources slide.
Nah. Sir.
I have some questions for you about MS7 and .NET framework.
Yeah.
Is there any possibility that MS7 is going to include 3.5?
SP1.
That's what it does.
It has 3.5 SP1.
Yeah, 3.5 SP1 is the version.
Good. Thank you. Because
So he finally got a decent base on it, right?
Yeah. Well, the selling 3.5 is just always a nightmare for anybody to take credit.
Yeah,
it's still on the framework.
It gets better with .NET 4, actually. .NET 4 will come in good.
And that's the point of the mission.
Dr. Popper's cool. I saw you. I got a picture of you playing it in the NPR. You going to tell your dad about how you're telling me how you break the law? Oh, your friend breaks the law. Okay.
You're going to be getting to this. I can, I'll wait, but I'm very interested in looking at a big push about developing cross-platform.
Sure.
And we've been kind of looking at using mono or something like that. How would Silverlight...
Silverlight is cross-platform already.
But as far as, like, we have things... The keyboard switching place will probably need to call into native DLLs. Is that like an absolute roadblock, or is there a way?
Well, you can't go cross-platform if you're calling in a native DLLs.
Well, things like audio editing, where we'll be using like GStreamer kind of thing.
Yeah, you're down on one platform. You can't go cross-platform on that with Silverlight, at least. You might be able to do something with mono, but I don't deal with mono. That's a Novell deal.
Is there a place that compares? You know, the CLR that Silverlight has, that subset, versus something like mono.
I've never seen it. Never seen it.
Okay.
Yeah, because mono does have a Windows implementation, but it's not even up on a 3 level yet.
Yeah.
So it's basically Silverlight 2 right now. And it's, you know, I'm not even sure if they got native invoke functionality, per se. Yeah, but if you're going native DLL, you're not going cross-platform. You're going rich client, you're going to wind up writing some separate stuff.
Yeah, we're going to have some that's going to, I'm sure, have to be written 3 times. We're trying to minimize as possible.
You spec the interface and then have everybody implement the same interface and then do a separate platform shim for each one.
Then we can make those specific
ones. Yeah, and then have reach. But if you're trying to hook video editing and make it cross-platform, you know, that's going to be a pretty wicked interface.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's strictly audio anywhere by video. So
you seen anybody doing shims that are cross-platform for native invoke on 4?
What do you mean, like Mac?
Yeah, so somebody has function A on the Mac and function A on the PC, and they're essentially the same, but they're wanting to write a native shim.
Well, you can't really. I mean, there's no built-in support for native on Mac. Right?
Oh, that's right. There's not even any support. Yeah.
You know, they're looking at it. They've talked about it. I know Scott Guthrie, I asked him the question of, you know, native support on Mac, and he was saying that they're looking at some options like AppleScript integration.
It's definitely not in the specs right now. You know, so your native interop's all going to be on PC.
What's
COM objects I dispatch interface.
Yeah, what's the minimum you can get away with having to rewrite custom stuff? We have things like keyboard switching, where, you know, when the focus goes to text box, and you just switch to a phonetic keyboard and things like that.
You're not going to get that on the Mac. I mean, because there's just no interface to it right now that you can get to. And so I'm not even familiar with how that works, even though.
Yeah. Yeah, on the Mac, Mac, you're pretty screwed. On the PC, you're going
to
need...
As long as it has an iDispatch interface, you can get to it. At least in out-of-browser trusted mode, that's what I'm for. So it'll have to be out-of-browser and trusted. And I'll get into some of that.
Yeah, but it's a tough... You're on a tough route there.
What I'm seeing right now is, using mono, I can pretty much get away from a lot. Except for the user interface, and I don't see any way around getting, you know, a lot of the, if you do an MVC, I can get a lot of the logic, but the actual...
So you can't even get to it in mono?
A lot of stuff you use.
Because I was going to say, I mean, because your other option might be, I think you can build, I think there is a build of Moonlight for Mac, but if you can't get to it in mono, then Moonlight's not going to work for you.
Yeah, we'll be around afterwards, but I'm not too optimistic that I can give you too much advice there.
I mean,
you're way off the bounds.
Some of your stuff, at least the core stuff, you'd probably be able to go cross-platform, but certain things like that, you wouldn't be able to support. I mean, I don't know if that's like the main part of your application that's key. Is that a key feature?
It's big, yeah. Anthropology.
Now one thing... See, and I don't know that much about on the Mac how this works, but one thing they've been doing on the PC to get around some of this stuff is they'll have a local web server, and then that local web server will do that sort of stuff for you. So you'll make a request to your local web server that does some of that integration. So like there's a sample in the Nomada Studio so far.
It's the most practical where they actually presentation I've seen access yet.
Really?
Xbox 360 games,
they're all bleeding edge stuff, and nobody got back to fundamentals.
Yeah, all the stuff of, oh, here's a video, and then you rotate it. That's not
happening. And we're fixing to get into more data, yeah. But, the other thing is, all my stuff, even though I like playing with Advanced, I never push it past 200 level, because you saw what happened. I go, how many of y'all have been working with Silverlight or got it? Two people raise their hands. All right, let's talk about how to do this. And then, the Advanced stuff can come later.
Yeah, so you got media stream source.
Thanks a lot, man. That's nice.
Where you can
put out
email. And I think from what I understand, they're coming out with some samples.
He he's normally a $300 an hour consultant, right? But for the price of one beer afterwards, you can get him for an hour. I'm cheap with him, you know. And that's just a beer for him, you know.
Very good.
All right. We'll be around afterwards, too.
Yeah.
Good? All right. So we're going to keep going. Had some great questions on the break. But we will be hanging around afterwards, too, if anyone wants to ask questions. But loving the dialogue. Obviously, some people are excited and thinking about some stuff. So now I promised you we were going to start calling Twitter apps. So now we're going to go off and we're going to add in some code to start calling into Twitterville here. So I could go off and hand code a Twitter domain service to call into Twitter, but no one really wants to see me do that. Well, some of you sadistic types might, just to watch me suffer. But we've actually got a pre-written Twitter proxy service out here. I'll go in and I'll take a look at that. I add that in, and here's the Twitter proxy service DB. And we get in here, and it's got functions that are essentially get twits, get friends in a JSON format, get a user's archive, get request. Whoop, little boo-boo there. We need to come in and do a new Twitter user entity. And then other stuff along those lines. Now, if we take a look at the magic in here to show you there's really not any magic, what I'm going to do is we're going to pull out this query string. And it's twitter.com statuses friends timeline XML. And if I come into a browser, ooh, cool, Bearcat. All right. And I put in devfish. Is it? I don't know. Quick, what animal is that? I haven't looked yet. Bill says it's a red panda. We'll find out when we come back. I put in devfish into there, and it actually requires credentials for this. So that's why we're using the user ID password thing. And then it pulls out basically XML of everybody that I follow and their Twitter feeds. Like Bill Reese, I just saw go by. Oh, all right. Normal, blog, Silver Arcade. What'd you Twitter in here anyway?
Tim Heuer had a question about Twitter limits.
All right, there we go. So in reply to screen name Tim Heuer, that's a new field. So there's all kinds of wicked stuff in this that you could marshal along. But this is what we're kind of parsing to display data in our form. All right, so now I've got this proxy service in there. I'm going to rebuild the project because when I drop in a new class like that, I want to rebuild it because it actually updates the client side IntelliSense, gets it ready to be called. All right, now we're going to go down and we're going to open up the home screen. So we'll come into views. 3:30, make sure you shut me down so we get you plenty of time. That'll give me about 15 minutes to walk through whatever. I didn't get to show them, so. Mm-hmm. All right, actually 3:20. All right, we go into home, and I'm going to get rid of that hard-won ellipse. We spent a lot of time making a beautiful ellipse in here. All right, let's ellipse decides to go away. And I'm going to go off, and I'm going to open up some existing XAML. File, open, file, Tiki files, demo files, homexaml.xml. This is a little trick. If you ever want to keep stuff around, like HTML, which is an XML format, or XAML, put out a little snippets file and just put an XML extension on it. It makes it easy to cut and paste from if you want to go that route. So I dropped in some new layout for my home page. So we got a grid, some columns, got a stack panel, we got important scroll viewer to hold the tweets, and we got row desks, or we got another scroll viewer to hold our friends. Okay? Now what we're going to do is we have a user combo box up top as well. So we want to load that up with our data. So wherever that combo box went, there it is. Combo box, users, combo box. Let's view the code on this. And first thing I'm going to do with this is imports Twitter application.web. Now, I need to, the same deal, I'm going to set up a context. Let's move it up some. Dim m underbar cx as new Twitter users context. So going in, getting some context data. And then I'm going to come over here, and when we load up the form, I'm going to come in and I'm going to go, me dot users combo box dot data context equals m underbar cx dot Twitter users. And then I need to tell the context to actually go off and load my m underscore cx dot get Twitter user query. And when I run this, what I should see is all my Twitter users sitting in that combo box. Drop it. Wait, come on, give me some data back. Woohoo! We got data. Obviously, I would do a better job of message windowing that and blocking that control if it weren't loaded. So I've gone off to the database over my domain service, gotten those users back. Now what we want to do is we want to go off and we want to pull in our Twitter data for a particular user. So I'm going to come over here and we're going to set up dim m underbar cx Twitter proxy as new Twitter proxy context. So when we pulled in that Twitter domain service, it created us a Twitter proxy context so we can easily talk into those Twitter APIs that are contained within it. And then basically what we need to do here is we're going to have to actually make some calls when the user combo box selection changes to go off and populate. So we'll come up here to our combo box. And we'll do selection changed equals a new event handler. And then right mouse, navigate to the event handler. And we're going to first we got to get our user as string equal, or actually, equals a direct cast from e.added items 0 to Twitter user, which was defined out in Twitter proxy context, dot username. Then what we're going to do is we're going to set up our invoke op. Oh, doesn't know about invoke operation here. So what we have to do is we have to go off and we have to do an import on system.windows.ria.data. So that's where that invoke op lives. So now I come down here and it's invoke operation of string. And then invoke op equals m underbar Twitter proxy dot get twits with underbar user. Now, the same pattern, right? I'm doing an invoke here with a parameter that returns a result. We have to do our private sub git twits operation completed. Sender as object, E as event args. Yeah, this one? Yeah. The IntelliSense hasn't barked on me, so I'm trusting it at this point. Not always the best way, but add handler, underbar invoke op dot completed for address of me dot get twits operation completed. So when that operation completes and comes back, what I want to do is dim our op as invoke operation of string equals direct cast sender invoke operation of string. Now I can come in here and I can go dim underbar XML equals the operation dot value. So remember, it's returning us just a raw XML string. And then I'm going to go tweets, which is the name of the field out in the form, dot deserialize, or tweets dot data context rather, equals tweet, and whoop, I forgot to include a little class. We actually have a little helper class out here. I'm going to pull in. It's a special class to help us work with this stuff, and I'll show you what's going on in here. So I'm going to add in existing item, tiki files, demo files, and we got tweet, and add that in. Equals tweet dot deserialize with our XML. And why would you not like that? Tweets, tweets.
That's the example not saved to me.
Let's go out here. File save. Don't want to have to go over to pure run mode this quick, but there's tweets. All right, let's just build it. It's barfing out way ahead of that. So broken IntelliSense on another file is keeping the IntelliSense from coming through there. What's happening is tweet uses xDocument.parse. xDocument.parse lives in system link. So what I'm going to do here is I'm going to do an add reference, and I got all this stuff over in recent. You can tell I've been practicing just for you. System XML link, we add that in. And now, that fixed it. We try to compile again. All right. So what's happening is when we call this particular home function, goes off to our Twitter proxy stuff using the asynchronous model, gets an XML stream back. Then it comes over here and takes that XML and goes into this particular class, tweet.db, that's a custom class that we wrote, that has fields in it like username, avatar, text, whatever. And then it knows how to deserialize the XML back into an instance of that class. So xDocument.parse, tweet.xml, for each C and doc root elements, create a new tweet with username equals XML syntax screen value, avatar to profile image URL, and text into C text.
Can I add something more?
Yeah, so one quick thing on this. You can't data bind directly to XML and to an X document. It's got to be something that has named properties, and you got to bind to the public properties in order for data bind to work. And that's really the key thing about this class.
Yep. And so this class is actually a one-way class. We're not round-tripping this class or anything like that. So also, it's just we're kind of stuffing it out, and off we go. Yep, absolutely. And we could push more fields. You saw in that stream that, when I pulled up the actual result, there's a million fields in there. We'll show an example on the friends where with JSON, If the fields exist, it'll automatically serialize right into the fields without you having to do this. But with Twitter also, I found the JSON API doesn't like to be up a lot, so it gets pretty fun there. But basically, we're taking the XML and stuffing it out. Ought to be able to run now. We come out here, we grab a Twitter username, and woo, yes, we got tweets. Now, isn't that beautiful? Yay, all right. So what's happening there is it's just giving us one little thing for each line, right? So let's hop over to PowerPoint. We're going to talk about resource dictionaries and stuff, and we'll come back, and then we'll make it pretty. So let's see. Merge resource dictionaries are pretty cool. This allows us to take externally defined resources contained in essentially a Silverlight quote style sheet and use it to layer out the whole kind of window. Enables you to share the resources between different screens, different applications, etc. Big advantage here in Silverlight 3 in that in Silverlight 2 you couldn't divide the resources over separate files. The way you do this is you put them in a little XAML file, and I'll show you what this looks like, and then add it in to a centralized resource dictionary. Here it's app.xaml, and that brings it in. So let's go off, and again, being the cheater guy in crunch time mode, just remember, if they ever give me enough time, I can chew it all up. So sit here for hours. You would be dying by the end. All right. Add existing item. We're going to come in here. And what I have is I have this itemstyles.xaml. And I'm going to add this into my assets directory. You've been wondering like where all the colors and stuff that we're using in our application come from. So this is the original styles.xaml. Styling styles. So you see content frame style, content border style, things like that. We come over here and we have this new one that we just added in, item styles. Written by some brilliant Silverlight coder somewhere. I don't know. I stole this, obviously. So we got data templates. Basically, we got a friends item template and a tweet item template in here. So a common way to render out these tweets. Now, in order to get these used, we have to come over here to app.xaml, and we have to add in something that pulls them in to our merged resource dictionary. Okay, so when this compiles, it'll pull in. We now have this wonderful style sheet collection, XAML styles or whatever, pulled in. I'm sure that offended Bill when I said style sheet.
So that makes it easier for you to steal other people's styles. Right?
Makes it very easy.
Bring it into your app.
Yeah, so that's one of the things. I am a pack rat. He mentions it's very easy to steal other people's styles and bring them into your app. When you're working through sample apps and you find somebody's styles that are cool, great. Start building a collection of these guys. The other thing is if you go to galleries on the Microsoft Expression site, do I got a link? I think I got a link to that on here. Yeah, the second one from the top on the right-hand side, Expression Gallery, there's all kinds of pre-written styles and stuff that people have contributed up there, and you can borrow those as well. So a cool repository there. The other thing is, like, I know Bill's firm, Vertigo, has put a ton of sample apps up into CodePlex. Great styles done by highly trained graphic professionals there for you to liberate
and
into your application.
Silverlight Toolkit has a bunch of themes too.
Silverlight Toolkit has a bunch of themes in it as well. So these are useful. I mean, you've all seen my website. Yeah, it looks like a four-year-old with a crayon had a meltdown on it. Incorporate the styles into your stuff, and you don't have to be the great graphics guy to do those kind of things. So, pretty cool deal there. All right, so we got that style in there. What we need to do now is apply it over to home. And we're going to come over, and we've got this items control here. And what I need to do is on this items control...
Friends.
Is that not? Oh, I'm on. That would have been interesting. I was over on Friends. We're going to move over to Tweets. And what I'm going to do is I'm going to do an item template. And it's going to be coming from a static resource, which means it's compiled in. And we're going to do a tweet item template. So now when I run this, you get used to it. Although the Silverlight or the Visual Studio 2010 IDE is extensible, have fun doing that. So now, based on this item template we laid in there, I get a picture, I get some nice formatting and all that. So remember, this is our tweet item template. Actually, let's stop running the app and we'll go take a look at this. Ooh, look, .NET Nuke plus Rhea Services. That looks cool. All right, this is the problem I have with Twitter. Now I feel an overwhelming urge to go spend 45 minutes reading this article. No, Will Stroll didn't. That's what you should Twitter. Where's Will Stroll? We were just talking about .NET Nuke and Rhea.
Yeah.
All right, so if we come over here under Solution Explorer and we go look at that itemstyles.xaml. So it gave us a picture, gave us a line, gave us some separation in there. We see it's moving really slow. All right, so we can come in here, and we've got an image. So that's where the image comes from. Then there's a text block with username. And then the next one goes down. This was grid column one. This goes into grid row one. And it's one the text block is bound to the username. The next one is bound to the text. The one above is bound to the avatar. And that's applied to each item. So it's nicer that you're doing it in the central style sheet than if you want to reuse that same look and feel, you can go off and apply it to other areas. Everyone cool with that? More or less, this is like the central resource collection that's available to all applications. So application level things go there. An example of a master page in here would be like mainpage.xaml because it has different content areas contained within it. It's more or less a res file. It could be that. Good enough, yeah, close enough. That makes it, yep, that's it. All right. So now let's wire in some friends here. How we doing? We're doing good. All right, I should make it all the way through, hopefully, the data chart, so we'll be good. Data pager. And then I'll go into turbo mode. Okay, so let's come out here, and we're going to close this down. So now I want to do something. When I get somebody, I also want to get their friends. So we're going to come over here into the home XAML, .vb. And when my get friends operation completes, I'm going to go ahead and set up a get friends operation completed. So private sub, get friends operation completed. As object, E as event args. And what I'm going to do here is I'm going to set up the dreaded invoke operation completed of string equals direct cast with sender as invoke operation of string.
Is this the part you said we get tired of saving?
This is about where I get tired of typing it, yes. And now what we're doing is we're going to be calling this, and we're going to be getting some JSON. I'll set up the call in a second, equals underbar op.value. And once we get JSON, I want to basically put it into the friends. And I need to go out and add in one of these helper classes again. So it's going to be my TwitFriend helper class. Now, I know I'm going to have a little issue in TwitFriend, because it's not going to know about system, runtime, serialization, JSON first, and then it's not going to know about this magic data contract serializer JSON. So the JSON support actually, we actually don't need this one.
Does everybody know what JSON is?
So does everyone know what JSON is? Besides the hatchet murderer guy. All right. JSON is short format XML that's passed over the wire a lot. JavaScript object notation. It's just another way of passing XML over the wire, but it's very short format, object-oriented JavaScript that's used. Now what I need to do here is I need to go in and add in a reference to system.servicemodel.web, because that sounds like the natural place that someone would put JSON libraries. That was sarcasm. But it is where they actually stuck the JSON serialization support.
You mean it's not those two namespaces that have JSON in them?
No, I mean, if we wanted to have it like system.json or system.json.deserialization, that would have made much too much sense. What did I do to this? All right. And now at that point, we have the new data contract serializer JSON in there. So what this does is when I was inspecting that thing, there were various field names. So it was like lowercase description. There was a screen underbar name. There were other field names like that in that stream that was coming back. With the JSON deserializer, if an object has an exact match to one of those names, it will put that value onto that object. So we're going to go off to the friends feed, get a stream back, and we're going to put it into this class and use this data contract JSON deserializer to automatically overlay it back over the class. So we go into TwitFriend, we're going to use its deserialization function there. It looks like the IntelliSense broke too. Okay, now this is get friends operation completed. So what we're going to do is after the user's combo box selection changes, we're going to come in here and we're going to go dim underbar friends op. I told you were going to get tired of invoke operation completed. As invoke operation of string, underbar friends op equals the CX Twitter proxy dot get friends JSON with the user. And then we say add handler to friends op dot completed with address of get friends op completed. Run it, cross our fingers, duck and cover. Wait for app. Come over here, we'll go down to the Star Wars guys, and there we go. So it's pulling back the friends. Now, we need to make it pretty, right? Same kind of deal. Right now, it's just overlaying the stuff. Probably should have done this before, but kind of forgot. Go over here to Home, and Home XAML. Try not to rename the page as you're going there. Don't you give me not responding. All right, there we go. We're going to come down here, and we got this items control friends, item source equal binding. We want to give it an item template equals static resource friends item template. Friends item template will basically have a nice pretty layout like we just saw before. Run the app. come in, give me back. Number two. And there you go. Now, if your followers, the people you follow on Twitter looks like this, you are a geek. That's from a geek. Okay, any questions? So a fairly complete little app. Right now we've done data entry. Now we've called out to some other services, consuming data from them. Everyone comfy so far. I did do this on the train. Actually worked out a lot of kinks in this thing, taking the train down to Lauderdale to watch the Rugby World Cup pool match down there. So that was, next time I'll stay in the regular seat, though. All right, so this is our Silverlight 3 data grid here. And this is part of the Silverlight toolkit again, originally. Now it's part of the Silverlight SDK when you install it. You start playing with the Silverlight toolkit, it gets pretty interesting. Lots of great controls in there. Source code's always in there, but you can also get binaries of compiled stuff from the Silverlight SDK. So when stuff's in the Silverlight toolkit, it's basically being worked on and finalized. When the binaries are in the SDK, then that means we think it's cooked and it's ready. But Silverlight SDK is a nice, fun thing to get all kinds of cool tools from. So it's off on silverlightcodeplex.com. That's on the resource sheet, I think. So page collection view we can also use. And what this is, this works with a data pager. And once you've returned a data set down to the client, it will page that data for you and work with where you're at and return the appropriate elements. It does not go to the server and do it, which is probably what you're hoping for, database guy.
There is a way to do that.
There is a way to do. What's the way to do that?
The main data source with resources.
The main data source with resources, which is
that
yeah.
Built-in paging.
So one way to do that on the server side, Bill's saying, is a domain data source of Enria services. So there's a non-binding control. There's actually a sample of it in the source code for this that I'm going to post up, but we're not going to be hinting that today. But if you're interested in that, the domain data source. So basically, this is a way to do grouping, sorting, filtering, stuff like that. Collection must implement IEnumerable, and it works in with a data pager, which you then attach to the data grid to implement data paging as well. So let's come in here. We're going to implement some, this will probably be the last one we kind of wire up from scratch. The rest will be kind of click-through demos on the time factor. So let's come in here. And we're going to go up and we're going to add in a search page to our views. So we're going to call this search. Add that in. And then let's go over and we're going to go into our Twitter proxy service in here. And we're going to go off and get a little snippet to add in. File, open, file, Tiki, demo files. And then there is search.vb. Liberate that. And let's drop it in here. So search goes off and basically hit search.twitter.com, search JSON, and basically HTTP encodes it on the return. Simple stream coming back that we're going to catch. Rebuilding it because we just put something in the server-side stuff. If I don't, it won't show up in the client-side IntelliSense very easily. We come over here to search XAML. And I'm going to go open up some search XAML. File, open, file. All right, grab this whole mess of stuff. And we come back over here to search. And we're just going to get rid of the inner grids and replace. Well, I'll say build build. It's probably not going to know about data grid, I'm thinking. Yep. Here's a trick. I pulled in this data grid, but it didn't have the namespace up top, so it knows nothing about it. I don't really want to redo my data grid, so what I'm going to do is I'm just going to slide this down a little. And we come over here and I see data grid. If I go down a little more, I'm going to drag a data grid into the blank area. Thank you. Let go. And now it added the namespace up here, right, for the data grid. And then I just get rid of this one and left my code snippet intact. Without the namespace, it just doesn't know about data grid. Oh, great. So now namespace, which one's it mad at? Grid X. Oh, I left this file open and now it's trying to compile it in there. That ain't going to work. It liked my XML file so much it tried to merge it in. All right, and then this one's easy. All right, so we're looking good, and what I've got here is essentially a nice little search form, a data grid to return some results. So we got a text block, search text. We got a button sitting there to take whatever we got in the search text, put it in. Now we're going to wire up a call. Good. Onto that page. Okay, so last time you'll have to watch me type all this mess again. We come in here. So here's our search page. And what we want to do is we want to wire in a button click handler. So we'll come over here, find our button, and we're going to go click equals a new event handler. Right mouse, navigate to event handler. What we want to do is we want to do a dim m underbar cx as new Twitter application .web .Twitter proxy context. And then what we're going to do is I'm going to get the search text. And then I'm going to set up my invoke op. Oh, it's not going to know about it because we haven't done a couple things up top. Imports Twitter application.web, imports system.windows.data.ria.data. Okay, and then invoke op is going to call out to the Twitter search API with the text. Then at this point, that's where we'd hook in our callback. I like to have my callbacks wired up first. Private sub search op completed. S as object, or sender as object. He has event args. And then we come in here, add handler, m underbar cx dot completed. Invoke op dot completed. I think if I had done it a million times, it would realize what I'm thinking, but it doesn't. And then address of me dot search op completed. Okay, so when we get done with this, we do the same kind of thing. We wire in, we want to pull our search result out. Dim op as invoke operation of string equals direct cast sender with invoke operation of string. And then we go search grid dot data context equals search results. And we don't have, remember I keep mentioning helper classes, or adding in these magic helper classes. So we've got a search results helper class we now need to pull in. Yeah, these are all little helper classes that we created for this. So there's search results VB. But they're also pretty simple templates. Oh, and I need to add in search result entry. Yeah, it's your business logic type class. Or more like, I don't know, it's in between the database and your business logic. So it's a conversion class to pull the XML stream in, put it into a business object for you. So if we come in here, this is like search results, right? So it's got a property results, which is JSON bound, and then basically a deserialized JSON function in it. If we go over to search result entry, which is another class I just added in, search result entry, it's basically mapping out one-to-one with the fields that would be available that we're interested in. So it makes it easy to bind to. And then build again. Should yak out on this one line. There we go. Search result data context equals search results dot deserialized JSON with the op dot value. So we get that nice JSON stream back. We're going to take search results. We're going to deserialize it to JSON and pop it into the grid. Is the what?
Entry.
Yeah, search results entry was alpha class too. Yeah, trust me, if you're watching me code those up, we'd get nowhere quick. So, you know, it's just like those are kind of short time slices. Oh, and since we didn't put it in the menu, we get to navigate to it directly. Normally I'd put it in the menu, but search. We come over here. See if people are saying nice things about Bill today. I know they're not about me. Let's see. I hit my request limit at Tiki Hut, Bill Reese. Is it started yet? I'm not getting any streaming from the WIMP plugin. Did you just share up the URL?
Yeah.
Oh, man. Did you tell her she did that? That's pretty cool, actually. Did he pick up the streaming? All right, so
we got it.
You might be better off shooting an email. Yeah, Devfish doesn't check his replies. Don't Twitter me if you want to talk to me, folks, okay? let's see. Who can go in the middle of a school day? Well, all y'all can, I guess. All right, there we go. Good stuff. Look, see, they talk nasty about me and they talk nice about you. All right. There's something to be said there. All right. Be a nice guy. Hey, there's a starter. So, pretty cool result there. We're kind of in crunch mode, so I'm going to hop over to another project real quick. And this is actually the project that I'll be posting up to the web. So, this is the Twitter application completed. And just want to show you a few things as we move along. Instead of coding them up, I'll show you where they're at in here. So the Silverlight Toolkit also has charting controls in it. Now these aren't, you know, the super end of the earth chart controls. What? Sorry, I see a hand from way in the back. Yeah. Well, I'm not going to code that on the fly, but if you pop me an email, I'll get you an example. There's row item templates and stuff you can use inside that will enable you to do that. And I think there's some examples out there, but Jay Healy, pop me an email, and I can find you some ways to do that. Specify out your scenario, too, and if you have a data structure you wanted layered inside of that, just send me a little note on the data structure. But that should be pretty straight up. And if it's not, there's always third-party controls. But if it can be done inside the grid, I can figure it out. But I have seen stuff with multi-row binding in there and things along those lines. On the chart controls, free download, silverlight.codeplex.com. One note about this, it is supported by Microsoft, so you can call support if things start blowing up. It takes advantage of data binding, very customizable. Let's come out here, and I'll show you the result, and then we'll just walk into the code because we're kind of time crunched again. But this was the chart we saw.
So you got to reply back that this that he is able to talk hear the stream.
Oh, cool. Well, we just gave his Twitter a big plug, so there we go. Look up Susan Wiest and let Susan Wee know that too. I think that's Susan's Twitter handle out front. So, all right. So we come over here and there's a chart control in there. And when we pull it up, what we get is basically the friends. And then we've also got the friends with the most followers charted off there. So you see, like, Hanselman's the king of Twitter on that one. There's Will Wheaton, LeVar Burton, and Brent Spiner. You can see how many people are following them. Looks like poor old Brent Spiner only has 1.3 million followers.
1.3 million, and he's lagging behind the
man. And he's just lagging. You know, I was pretty damn proud of my 700 Twitter followers. Now, thanks, Bill. All right. So this one's pretty interesting when we look at the wire up on this. You should actually Twitter him, email you or me with his feedback on it, because he's one of the outside viewers, and pretty cool. And we're probably going to have to restart the stream when we get you on, too.
Yeah.
Okay, so we come over here, and the key pieces on this. So the first thing we've got is under search results. Search results.vb. What you're going to see is we have this paged results class that is a page collection view. Remember I showed in the PowerPoint? That's the magic class that enables us to keep track of our paging and where we're going. So we return a new page collection view over results when we're doing this. And you can see results right here is a list of search result entries. Then, to use this thing, what we do is we come out here into Home, and we've got our grid somewhere in here. There's our chart, rather. In the charting toolkit, we've simply, same kind of pattern. I drug a chart in from the toolbar. Creates the namespace for us, and then I can use it. Then I drag in a column series, again, to create that namespace. The magic in here is the binding of the column series. The item source is binding. The dependent value path is followers count, and the independent value path is screen name. Now, how does it actually get its binding? When the friends op, get friends op completes, we come in here and we go friends. We get our friends list by casting the JSON out into a list of Twitter friends. And you can look at the source code, and it's all pretty interesting stuff, but a list of Twitter friends. Now, this is interesting, right? We're going to use link inside of our code against an in-memory data source to just pull out the top seven friends real quick. So, dim top friends for F and friend list, order by f.followers.count descending, take the top seven. So everyone always thinks link is against data. Link here is against a in-memory collection we have that's a JSON-based collection that we cast over to an IEnumerable collection, and then we say, give me the top seven of that. Cool? Kind of smoky, but this is powerful when you think about it. And then off we go. So that's how we got the chart working there. Any questions? One of the first things, once you get past being able to build something like I've shown you today, spend a lot of time exploring that control toolkit that's up on CodePlex. There's just some great controls in there, going to save you all kinds of headaches. And by exploring the samples and how they're wired up, you can see the techniques that are working in there. I guess one of the things I got is I actually found a good Silverlight 3 book that I like. A lot of them are kind of written about pre-release Silverlight 3 and don't really address a lot of these scenarios. But digging through code actually turns out to be, unfortunately, the best way to really learn about a lot of this stuff. Some of the new some of the webcasts and stuff are pretty good too, but you know, digging into the code is the main way that really kicks it off. Okay. We also have a child window template. I kind of showed you that earlier, where when blocks were Larkflow until window was closed. That's good. I showed you that earlier where we had that custom pop-up. So you can have a child window template. You can basically create the new child window template. It's pop-up modal, isolates out the background, and it returns dialog results, OK, cancel type dialog results, just like if you're defining out a Windows Form pop-up modal box. That's really powerful when you start thinking about doing LOBF. Sir, I think. Yep. Don't know about that one. I think you can control the startup positioning on it. I'll have to double check that. I'm pretty sure you can control the startup position. Yeah, it's just me.
The question was
about. Oh, does it always come up centered over the base one?
There's a blog post by Tim Hewer where he talks about changing that.
Yeah, so that'd be a good one for you to pop me, and then I can add it up to the wiki and the resource list when I dig it out, and I can add a little customization example on it, but changing the pop-up position of the dialog list. Now, one thing, if you don't email me, I really do tend to forget about these. Last session I did, I asked five people who said they were going to email me, and I got one so far. Of course, it hasn't been answered yet, but I did reply to it that I would answer it. But y'all pop me those things. Definitely helps me build up a list of cool samples on stuff as well. But the child window template, this is nice. You got a nice pop-up thing. You can just slap it up and go. So you think about it, before in web, it was really difficult to do the pop-up metaphor. Everybody was going over to tiered things and stuff like that. Now you can do a blocking pop-up window inside your web app that's not an alert window by the browser. It's its own Silverlight-contained window. So I think that's pretty powerful. It's got a lot of stuff. We're not going to hit that right now in the interest of time because I already showed it earlier, but cool. Behaviors are pretty new for Silverlight 3. So these are very similar to WPF triggers. So you're able to have triggers respond to events and do things. One thing that they're trying to do with behaviors is have behaviors that are designer friendly so they can be used in Blend. So what this does really is allows us to add functionality without having to resort to too much code. The Blend SDK, if you want to work with these, is required to build them. There's a big gallery of free behaviors up on that gallery.expression.microsoft.com. So, you know, this is just some of them I pulled off the list up there. So things for like drag and drop behaviors, middle mouse button for scrolling, make text larger, smaller, different things like that, watermarking text boxes, all kinds of things. But just a bunch of them are out there for you to play with. So what we're going to do with this one is I'm just going to show you how this one's been wired in already. If I come over here to home, first I've drug in a behavior that somebody else wrote that I fixed. I won't bring that up. So we got basically the code here to do a drag drop behavior. Now that being said, you also need to add in a reference. And in this case, it's the systems Windows interactivity reference. That enables you to use behaviors inside your code. Once you do that, you can come out here, and I'm going to open this up in Expression Blend. Blend is not free.
The Blend SDK is free.
Blend SDK is free. You can actually compile these, and then I'll show you what the code looks like to put this stuff into your Silverlight. It's not super hard. You could do it by hand. This is just another way to do it. I could probably, based on your Oracle-ness, help you out there. Scummy Oracle guy.
There's a free trial.
Alright, so what you do is we come over here into Views, we go into the Home, and what I want to do is I want to find my tweets. What? Yeah, yeah. And this one it is, yeah. Oh, no, it's Favorites, you're right. And I have a source on the left, and I want to drag over to this area on the right that's Favorites. So I come in here, and what I did was I expanded this, went over into Behaviors. It rips through my libraries that I've got in there, as well as my custom code, and finds all the behaviors that are in there. So you see right now it found that one VB file, drag-drop behavior. But if I wait, there's a couple other default ones installed into Systems Windows Interactivity that it picked up as well, like Hyperlink Action and all that. Then I take drag-drop behavior, and I literally drag it over onto Tweets. And Tweets is now my source for my drag-drop behavior. It has one open property window for the target name, Favorites Border. And I filled that in. And that's all I had to do to get that going. Now once I do that, if we come over here and we take a look at favorites.xaml and we hunt down Tweets, because this was associated under Tweets, so there's Tweets, we see this iInteraction Behaviors. And then it's Twitter application, Twitter sample, drag drop behavior, and the parameters filled in for favorites border. Now when this guy completes, I want to call into my code and do a drag drop behavior under bar drop. Well, let's move this over just a little. And we'll come over here, right mouse, navigate to event handler. When I do that, I go favorites, which is my right side. I want to go into the items and insert whatever's being sent across in the drag operation as a tweet. So if we run this, did that. Oh, it could be my first Cassini crud of the day. Every now and then, little Cassini likes to hang up on you. And you get to do... Whoop! Oh, there we go. Cassini's figured out I was fixing to put some wampum on it. All right, we come over here to Favorites. And this is the completed app I'll be giving you in the download. And now I can drag from one side to the other. And that's it, pretty much. Drag, drop.
But you can apply that to any.
Yeah, you can apply that to anything.
Yeah. What did you find out again? There was a custom behavior written for this demo.
Yep.
It'll be in the source demo. So, I mean, the nice thing about this though is that you're separating this code from your view, and you can also apply it to any items controller at that point. And that's the great thing about these behaviors is you can build up a library of them and then just apply them in Blend or apply them to any element you want in Visual Studio. Yep.
So we come over here and you can see there's 47 behaviors sitting up here in the gallery, right? So you can see, you know, the various things when they were added, etc. So that's pretty nice. This is off the gallery. The wiki I keep talking about, just to give you a walkthrough on this. Again, these are what I call the links that I just can't throw away. So I come up here and I go over under like Expression and go into Expression Blend, and you know, that's got a link to the gallery up there and some other things like that. You can actually search it. You want to search behavior, you know, find a bunch of stuff like under Silverlight 3 specifics. But this is my little repository of good links. Sir?
Any
And I meant to put Bob Baker's blog in here, but I didn't have a chance. All right. Yes, sir. No, it's a generic object that's containing, and you have to cast it out to whatever you want it to be. That being said, you can make it context-aware. It's open source. You know, just have fun with it. In fact, you'll find almost all the behaviors you get right now are all open source behaviors. Cool. I like that. Okay. Oh, this gets, you ain't seen nothing. Wait till you see Silverlight 4 stuff. Oh, man. This thing gets better and better every time they do something with it. Silverlight 3 introduced the idea of out-of-browser support. This is when you run an application, you can actually make it so it's able to run outside the browser. It's cross-platform. It will install out-of-browser on a Macintosh. No extra downloads are required. It can launch offline. It's sandbox security at this point. Silverlight 4 introduces some stuff where on Windows it can call out to an iDispatch interface in Silverlight 4, but in Silverlight 3 you're still 100% sandboxed. But you are able to call web sources or other online resources, so it gives you data to your back. We got APIs to help with install, to help with connectivity. You got isolated storage to write stuff to locally. Some key APIs and events, application.current.installstate. If the install state changes, you can hook that. If you're running out of browser, you can get that information. You can actually trap, because you're running out of browser, if the network goes offline. You can trap if your network goes offline and maybe you move to your isolated storage state. You can check if your network address changes. You can go out and you can check and see if there are updates available for your application. All kinds of methods you can get into and play with on this. So this application we're futzing with right here, window, close all documents. Let's go take a look at the main page. And we got a button, I'll go ahead and show it and then we'll come back into it. But we got a button on it to install it for out of browser. You can also do that with the application simply by right mouse clicking on any surface and say install me out of browser. And then we got some APIs that are kind of reactive APIs in there. So let's come over and let's just run this guy. All right, we're going to ignore that install me, but what I've done is I've configured this application through its properties so I can install this application onto the computer. So I'm going to install it onto the computer. I'm just going to put it on the desktop for now. Starts up a second instance of it. I've coded the second instance so that when it starts up, it knows if it's running out of browser, it doesn't show that install me button. And somewhere out here we'll see Twitter application. This is the one that's been installed on the desktop. If I close that down, there it is on the desktop, right? I run it. There we go. If I were brave enough to drop my network connection in here, which would kill the whole streaming thing I'm trying to do, I've actually got an API in there which will change the background to red, let you know you've gone offline. You can react accordingly with that. The other thing, I've got an offline application. It's going back to the server, or an out-of-browser application. It's going back to the server. That's where it picked up these user IDs. Now it's going back to the server to pick me up a bunch of Twitter information. Yes? That's it. You just saw everything it can do, pretty much. You got isolated storage for your offline storage. It's not a database. What you can do with it, that's your thing. Sir, in the back. It's downloaded to the IE cache. So it's not a user addressable file.
Anybody else? Every now and then I see these hands shoot up, but from this angle you can't see the people, so it's like, all right, cool. Good questions from y'all. Thank you very much. But this is massively powerful. To configure this, whoop, I still got one running. You want to say? You're breathing. Normally when you make that noise, you want to. All right. We come over here. And I'm going to go to my Twitter application, and I can go properties. And you see out-of-browser settings. Enable running this browser application out-of-browser. Coming here to the out-of-browser settings, you can set up width and height, it comes up, et cetera, et cetera. Cool. Yes? What can happen is there's an API that you can call. It says check to see if there's updates available. It'll pull down the updates and it'll restart, offer you the option when it's done. You need to tell your user, I'm going to restart this app. And then you restart the app. Forcibly uninstall once it's down? You can. You can probably, there might be a way with SMS group
can
policy.
The user or the...
Yeah. So like I'm sitting here. How can you forcibly uninstall if your user has an app down? You could forcibly make them upgrade, but maybe you could make them upgrade into a bye-bye dude app. Something along those lines, but you can't actually get there. Now this is interesting. Right now, look at this. I'm running this app offline. There'll be nothing up on the server because did something weird. Anyway, we're going to remove it. See ya. And now that app's off my computer. Let's see what else we got in here for offline.
How big can this XMP
file stay? Big as you make it. Yeah, you can have it in separate ZAP files, definitely. Yep. Yeah, realize this is intro. There's lots of advanced techniques you can use for this kind of stuff. Pretty cool dialogues out on the Silverlight forums and things about application architecture and partitioning. We're not even scratching into things like Prism and Unity, MVVM interfaces, stuff that can take all the joy right out of coding. So, any alt.NET guys on the live feed, don't firebomb me. All right. There we go. So in this main page, we had some stuff for installing the app. We had some stuff. So we got stuff like when the current install state changes, change the button visibility. When the network changes, we're changing the background. So you can see we're hooking some of that stuff. The whole code for installing it offline, application current install. So pretty nice goodies there. I'm actually going to start fading this. There's more stuff in here in the slide deck that we're not going to get to because I want Bill to have the last hour for some four stuff. But we do have really good support for IIS streaming. Basically, you need to use Encoder to go, and you can generate multiple stream levels, and then depending on how IIS detects your browser stuff, it'll start streaming the appropriate level. So you'll see this using like movie services like Netflix and stuff. The FBI warning comes up looking like crap on your 1080p TV. Then all of a sudden it gets better and better and better. It's figuring out your stream and starting to push the stuff through. Really nice goodies there. This is powerful, and I will put the demos up for this, and you can run them. Silverlight, there's kind of two different ways you can do this. One is the full-bore Big Honkin' Silverlight application, like I just showed you. That's where Silverlight, the whole app is Silverlight, takes up everything. Second one is the Islands of Richness. I got a base HTML app. Don't want to invest a lot in it, but there's something that I've seen in Silverlight that I just can't really do very well using HTML. So I can put Silverlight into my app and use the HTML bridge to talk from Silverlight into HTML. And anybody who wants to see demos of any of this, hang around after the session, after 5 o'clock, and we'll go out in the lobby and I'll show you a bunch of these demos and stuff. Got no problem with that at all. Then there's a third approach now where you can have multiple Silverlight controls inside the same browser. They can talk to each other across the page without using any HTML, and they can also talk across tabs. So that uses some messaging interfaces in there. That's pretty sweet. Those are part of the samples I'll be bundling together. That's just, you know, it's very, very powerful stuff. Yes, sir? Yeah, you could go up to, and you know, the what I would use there is I'd actually use a workflow engine up on the server. So I would use Silverlight on the front end to go off and talk to a workflow job that would execute a PowerShell script, and then you would go and gather your results afterwards. So kind of pulling workflow mechanism. Yeah, I mean, the sky's the limit, the imagination's the limit. Just real cool tool for working with that. Deep Zoom, one of my favorite things. I'll just show you a completed example, but if you come in and not for that reason, you're bad. We come over here and I go into Dev and we go into Silverlight and we go into Deep Zoom Projects, and where's Tampa Topo Explorer? I think that's the one that actually works. Oh, if I open the wrong one, it's going to be painful. One of these was bad, one was good. All right, let me look at my Solution Explorer real quick. BCS output, bad. Not responding. I think this was the bad one. All right. I had one of these that was killing, and then one of these that was, all right, that's the one we don't want. Tampa Topo Bathy. Ah, this is good. Exported data. Tampa Topo. This is actually unretouched, just generated stuff. So Deep Zoom Composer is, in this example, I got 120 meg picture of the Topo Bathy of Tampa Bay. And then I got some other overlaid images on it. If I tried to serve up a 120 meg picture in a browser, it's not going to treat me well. So what it does is actually chops this stuff into little bitty tiles that are then served out using the Silverlight multi-image control, which was part of Silverlight 2. So Silverlight in 3 actually enhanced this stuff. It introduced the Deep Zoom Composer as well. So just talking about the images, you can come in here, and if we go into the client bin, generated images, if we go into output images, you can see, like, for this, like, Healy family, I got a picture in here that I'll show you, Healy family. On its highest level, we got 0.jpg, which is a little kind of one pixel kind of picture of this thing. But if I get down under Healy family, and we get down to, like, level 10 on this, we go in and look, you can see it's kind of cutting up a picture at a very high level. So 0 being your high, and it can go all the way down. I've seen it to like 14. But let me just show you like what this result looks like. If you guys are doing anything with big images, NASA's been using some of this stuff. This is the underlying tool under Photosynth. Just really cool technology.
The new Bing Maps.
New Bing Maps. So this is... I can drag this around. This is a 120 meg picture, right? Now, what I've done is using Deep Zoom Composer, I overlaid other pictures on top of this. So you see these little bitty dots here? Watch this. I apologize to any vegetarians. Now, what's really cool is if you then overlay like another picture right there, right? And you can just keep going and going and going. If you've seen the Hard Rock Memorabilia site and you zoom in on one of the Beatles pictures.
Search for V.
You go in through their eye and it opens up a whole new world. Now look at the back out on this, right? So we can come over here. I thought I had water spouts in here.
Living in Florida isn't the easiest. This is not for wimps, folks. You all know that. There's a nice water spout going down my canal. Cool stuff like that, you know. And there's a good shot of it. Super light. Because all it's doing is streaming these little pictures each time.
Only enough to bring down what it needs to display at your current resolution.
And there's no other way. That's a full 120 meg image. I can get in here and I can say I was fishing under the Skyway. So Skyway's right here. And I thought there was a hump a little to the south of this one point, right? And then I come in here and I can say, you know, it was right at the cross with the Manatee ship channel. That must be it right there. There's a thing in here called Deep Zoom Composer. So you start up Deep Zoom Composer. You import images. You overlay them. You set up hyperlinks. And then you say generate. The trick to get a cool template like I got, which you can then modify, change it around to the expression 3 plus blend template, and off we go. So here's the Tampa Bay. This is the one I used. Oh, God. I probably shouldn't have clicked on the one with 120 meg. Anyway, if this thing ever comes up, I'll show you. It takes, when you're using big images, realize you're using big images. It's a tough thing to work with sometimes, but the end result is really good. Yes? No, if I'm at the highest level, remember when I was looking at that Healy family? What you had was like this 4x4 pixel blob, which was kind of color representative of what I was working with, right? That's all it would pull at that highest level. Now, as I zoom in, it's going to say, hey, you know what? He wants it about this big. That's level 5. Let's show that one. So it avoids it. It's really a great way to deal with high-res images. Downside.
We got a preprocessor.
Yeah, it takes a lot to process the images. If I had multiple 120 meg images, I'm going to put it there. All those images, the base source for it that I had was about 124 meg. The completed directory was 127 meg. So there wasn't a big downside in size. The downside is you got to have the Silverlight runtime installed, which is 40% of the population who doesn't like football or Olympics or Playboy or the Ultimate Fighting, the Emmys. If they haven't watched any of that stuff online, they're not going to be able to watch this. So. On this, no, not really. This was server independent. What I showed you here would run off of a Linux server. It's server independent. Don't tell the IIS guys I said that. They don't like it when I say that. Bing Maps has an awesome Silverlight control. I'll just show you one thing in there to show you the power of it. So if we go to, it's also my wiki commercial, dfwiki.devfish.net. Hey, Joe said something about Bing Maps. Great. We're going to come in here. We'll go to technology. We see Bing Maps. Bing Map control for Silverlight. And here's the interactive SDK for this. So I'm not going to really show you. I'm going to go to a really bad link I put in here. How about that? Microsoft SDK Silverlight. How did I wind up there? All right. Well, that's good. Let's use Bing Interactive SDK Maps. All right. Bing Maps Interactive. You better work, you piece of junk. Ajax. Oh, cool. Great. We got some dead links right now. I will get those resolved. There's a good interactive SDK up there for it. Bing Maps Control Home. How about that? Is that still alive? No, it looks like something's yanked on that whole thing. Anyway, it was a really cool site. You could go. It would show you XAML. It would show you all the stuff to lay it out. I didn't read the announcement today that they changed the URL, but I'll get that resolved and fixed out in the wiki. I'm running. GPU hardware acceleration. Basically, did we figure out a downside of this?
There's there is a remote chance that it might not work on some systems.
Remote chances might not work on some systems, but basically you turn this on and it'll use hardware acceleration on the platform. DirectX on Windows, OpenGL on the Mac. You set it in the Silverlight object tag, speeds up your stuff. Play with it, see if it works for you. We're still trying to work out. This is a beer conversation I've been having with Bill. When is this not a good thing?
Real important if you're doing full screen video.
Yeah. Yeah, it helps a lot with video. If you want to see if it's actually working, you can turn on this thing called Enable Cache Visualization, and it'll let you see if the caching is working or not. So stuff that's not being cached will turn red, and stuff that is being cached will turn green. It's really ugly, but effective. 3D effects. Not true 3D, because it's essentially bitmap rendering, but I can rotate the X, Y, and Z on a surface in a plane, including a dialogue or a grid or a panel, and they are live. So you can take a working surface and rotate it. Play with it, but this is a nice way, you think about user interface, instead of maybe tabbing, you tier surfaces, do some neat things like that. Again, that's a new 3.0. Writable bitmap, basically you can get into raw bitmap manipulation. You want to check that out for low-level stuff. It's also being...
I'll put a demo of that up in the break.
All right, Bill's. That one works on yours, huh?
Yeah.
All right. So Bill's going to show a writable bitmap demo during the break when we're switching out laptops, and then pixel shaders, same kind of deal. High level pixel shaders basically create things like drop down shadow and blur. There's a tool out there called Shazam where you can generate your own. Not going to hit that. This thing is. I thought it was pretty important and definitely underrated. In Silverlight 3, you can do a save file dialog. The user selects a path, the user selects a file name, but they can save a file out to their hard drive from inside of Silverlight. Nice picture there. Really important when you think about the writable bitmap class and the fact that you can do a writable bitmap and then re-render a bitmap back out and have them save it to their hard drive. Can't go open from the hard drive, but you can upload to an app from their local hard drive. So you might get you might be able to fudge a two-way path together.
Is there any way to none of the libraries are supposed to be not secret, but not available to the user over here, but is there a way to write libraries for it and then open from that if it's working like parallel control or whatever you can put a string for path?
You can't really traverse isolated storage and grep through it if that's what you're trying to do. Inside Silverlight, yeah, you can hit the same isolated store over and over again. No, outside apps can't hit isolated storage. So only the web app can go against its little isolated storage store. Only that only an app running from the same domain context can get in there.
Yeah, save as dialog.
Save as dialog. So you can save them outside, but programmatically I can't do this. So I couldn't say I'm going to put this down in ctemp Joe's secret spot. All my files are here. I can't do that from a program. The user could do that, but I can't do that. Okay, so that was my Silverlight line of business with Silverlight 3.0 features. We're going to get Bill up here. Goes watching on the encoding. The encoding stream is probably going to stop and restart real quick while Bill brings up his encoder.
Yeah, I'll
need
the settings.
Oh, all right. Maybe you can just pick up my file that I'm using. All right, cool. So why don't we take a quick 5-minute break while we get going, and we'll keep it there.
Or something that
yeah.